So, welcome to lecture 12. Title is Aerial Law. We're finally ready to start taking entanglement as the focus, entanglement in ground states as the focus of what we want to learn. In previous lectures, we've been learning how to, in practice, compute ground states, both for interacting spin systems and for the simplifying case of free fermion, free Majorana systems. And today, I want to start, I want to talk about this Aerial Law. That would be the big conclusion we will learn from all these numerical experiments that we did. But I want to summarize what we have found and what we would find if we would look at other systems in larger dimensions. So let's start with part A of the lecture. Call this 12.1. 12.1 is scaling of entanglement. And in ground states. And when I say ground states, I mean ground states of local Hamiltonians. But what I'm going to talk about mostly is free fermions. For two reasons. First, this is the type of systems that we have access to consider very large system sizes. And that's where we can draw conclusions, firm conclusions. On the other hand, it appears that when we try to do similar studies with interacting systems in one way or another, then we get very similar conclusions as well. So I'm going to talk about free fermions because that's what you could go back to your laptops and test. But the picture that comes out of it is much more general. So the first thing we want to do is 1 plus 1 space-time dimensions. And I will start with a gap system. So that's going to be gap system. Gap Hamiltonian. What that means is that if we plot the energy spectrum as a function of momentum, we'll have some ground state energy there, and the first excited states will be somewhere here, and the rest of excited states will live somewhere. But the idea is that there is a finite gap of energy, right? The energy defined as the energy of the first excited state minus the ground state energy is going to be finite. And maybe I should emphasize that what I'm going to do today is to consider that we have a lattice with n sides in the limit of n going to infinity. So let's worry about this. Let's stop worrying about the system size. The system size is infinite. And L is going to denote some finite distance in the system. It could be a two-point correlator, a distance of an expectation value by the ground state of a correlator between point zero or L. Or it could be the reduced density matrix on a region A of size L. Okay, so L is going to be the only finite distance we have in our system besides the lattice spacing. And L is going to be measured in lattice spacing, right? So if I say L equal to 20, I mean L lattice, 20 lattice size. Very good. So I want to start by focusing on this gap system, and this could be your Ising model. For instance, if in the Ising model, if you take the magnetic field to not be critical, so as an example here, then that could be Ising model for h different from 1. We will find a gap. Okay? And if we look at two-point correlations, then we will see that they decay in a characteristic way. They decay in some way. And then eventually they decay faster. And so this happens at some log of some distance L, which I'm going to call xi. And that's going to be, so what we will say is that these correlations, C of L, decay approximately as exponential of distance. OK? So there might be some regime where you see something compatible with the power law decay, but eventually this goes into exponential decay of correlations. And when you see that, sorry, I'm going to call this explicitly correlation length. So what's happening in the ground state of a gap system is that correlations may be more or less intense at short distances. But this two-point correlator, as you go to beyond certain distance, certain correlation length, these two-point correlations decay exponentially fast. And that, in practical terms, means that there are no correlations left after the correlation length, right? So if you look at the two-point correlator at a distance, say, two times the correlation length, it's very, very small. Three times the correlation length, it's, you can ignore. Okay? So these are systems where there are correlations, but they are mostly just short distance correlations all the way to some correlation length. And what happens if for that system, for that ground state, what happens if we look at the scaling of entanglement entropy? Well, we will see that the entanglement entropy grows in some way. And then it saturates to a constant. And that this saturation to a constant, and that's something you might have done yesterday as well, at the end of the last part of the tutorial we discussed, what happens if you take the Ising model and we don't use critical magnetic field, you would have seen that at long distances there was some saturation of the entropy. Okay. And so what we are going to say is that the entropy in this case, maybe first it's growing in some characteristic way, but eventually this entropy saturates to a constant. Okay? Yes?
Suppose I take some system like the Ising model where there's a parameter that if I give it a specific value, it's critical, and if I move it around, it's not. Then you're claiming that if I make that parameter bigger or smaller, I'm going to see the same thing happening to my correlation length and to my entanglement spectrum and all that stuff. Is there, like, in general, like a duality between them or something?
If you make it smaller or larger than the critical, in the case of the Ising model, there is a duality, Kramers-Wagner duality, which maps the system for a small magnetic field to the system for strong magnetic.
Is that like a more general statement?
The statement would be that not all models have this type of duality, but every time there is some form of duality, you will see this behavior.
Okay.
Yes?
How does an entanglement entropy connect to that bipartite entanglement across the, like in the sense of taking the Schmidt vectors of respective sequences of bipartitions across them?
Okay. Good. So I will be discussing that later.
Okay.
Can you ask me again when we get to that blackboard?
Sure.
Just remember the question and ask me that. Very good. So So this might look like simplified cartoon picture of what a ground state for a gap system is in 1+1 space-time dimensions, but that's pretty much what you will find. Okay. If you have a gap in the energy spectrum, then you'll find some characteristic scaling of the correlations, maybe power law initially, but eventually after some characteristic correlation length, okay, which has to do with precisely this gap, we'll find exponential decay of correlations. And at the same length scale, this correlation length, okay, we'll see that the entropy stops increasing in some characteristic way as well and saturates to a constant. Whereas, if we take the same model, now I'm going to do gapless here. If we take a gapless model, so that could be the Ising model. So that could, this could be Ising at h equal to 1. Then what we find is that the spectrum looks more like that. Okay, so by definition, gapless means that delta, a gap is 0 in this case. And the correlations at short distances may look very similar, but they continue to go as a power law forever. Okay, so this one here, the correlation scales as 1 over L to some power, P, which has to do with the scaling dimensions that we studied. And the entropy grows forever as a log. So the entropy S of L happens to scale as some constant, which happens to be the central charge. So some universal constant times log of L plus some other constant there. So what you can see is that the two pictures are consistent in the sense that if we were to change the magnetic field in this picture, in the top case, we would maybe suppose we close the gap a little bit. So let me find another color and try to put this together. So if I go to the gap case and decide to consider something that looks closer to being gapless, if I consider a smaller gap, what I'll see is the same behavior for longer, and eventually it will decay. And there will be some new correlation length, so there will be new correlation length. Okay? If the gap is smaller, the correlation length is going to be larger. Here we'll see the entropy scales, as in the critical case, logarithmically for short distances, for a bit longer, and then when we hit this correlation length, we'll have a saturation again. Okay. Yeah.
Can you read out the central charge of a CFT, which corresponds to a lattice model, even if the parameter is slightly up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that line still has the same slope, seemingly.
Very similar slope. There are corrections which are sublinear. So, at short distances, it's hard to distinguish between this line and this line. This is all only if you are sufficiently close to the gapless case, right?
Yep. I mean, otherwise, it just stops too fast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe that, you know, this is a simplified picture. Maybe something else happens at short distances and so on, right? This line here may have some lattice. When you are at the scale of lattice spacing, there might be some different behavior at short distances, right? So you could have it here as well. And what you need is to have entered the asymptotic regime of the CFT. And then if there is a small mass, eventually that means a long correlation length. Eventually, you'll see that you lose the asymptotic. This logarithmic scaling is replaced. It saturates into a constant. Very good. So that picture, that simple picture, actually is valid for most of 1 plus 1 dimensional system. Gapless. Gap finite correlation length leading to saturation of entropy, gapless, no correlation length, leading to this asymptotic universal behavior of the entropy. Now what we could do is to change model, and I'm going to take some risk here. I'm going to use some other color, maybe blue, to draw on the same picture what happens if we change the gapless. You know, here what we had here was the Ising model, was gapless, but then we also looked into this free fermion model that had a dispersion relation that looked more like this. Right? So the difference is that instead of 1-0 mode, now we had 2-0 modes. That will come with some other power law decay of correlations. Okay, so what's happening here is that instead of power P, there will be some other P prime, so we still have that these correlations go as a power law with some other prime power. And for the entropy, what we're going to see is that there is the same scaling but with a different central charge C. Right? If we double the central charge in this case, we'll see that the entropy now S of L. So here we had C equal to 1/2, and here we'll have C equal to 1. And we did play around with other models briefly, and what we saw is that if, for instance, now we start having more zero modes, then I'm gonna not talk about the correlation length. It's gonna be something similar. I'm gonna talk directly about the entropy. And what we're gonna see is that the more we can look here, look at the number of zero modes, and then you'll get some scaling of the entropy, which is going to be what we've been saying. It's going to be consistent with that. There will be some new central charge. But the central charge is going to be 1/2 times the number of zero modes. Okay. So we can think that this entanglement entropy is somehow counting the number of degrees of freedom that we have at low energies, at long distances. By number of degrees of freedom, I mean that there are some number of degrees of freedom attached to each zero mode. Okay, and so if we have more zero modes, we'll have more degrees of freedom at low energies, and this results directly into a larger central charge or more entanglement entropy. And I insist that that's interesting because this property, this plot here, is telling us about the dispersion relation. So we have a Hamiltonian. We can look at the energies, the different eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian. But this plot here is only telling us about the ground state. Okay? But the ground state seems to remember how many low-lying excited states we have in the system. The entropy of, by just looking at the scaling of entanglement entropy for the ground state, we can actually read how many zero modes we have in the Hamiltonian. And then the last thing I want to say is we can put this together. You've done this before. We can put here L, S of L. So now I don't put logarithmic scale. So if we do that, then we can compare the behavior of the entropy for a random state. You also saw that numerically, so random goes proportional to L, whereas ground states, for ground states, we had this 1 over C over 3, or let's say log L for critical ground states. Critical or gapless ground state, and then we have this saturation for gap ground state. Okay. So the conclusion, then, one broad conclusion is that ground states, whether for critical systems or gap systems, ground states of local Hamiltonians are not very entangled. Okay. And that should suddenly open some hopes within this bigger picture that we're following, where we would like to be able to efficiently represent this wave function. So what we have is possible computational implications. Well, let's look at a product state. So we are going to look at three different states of product state. So suppose we have a product state, that means for the n sides, we have that each of the sides, each of the spins, is in its own state. Okay. Can you tell me how much entropy we would have in this case as a function of L? So we consider now a subregion here, and we look at how much entropy we have for a product state. How much is the entanglement entropy? Zero, right? There is absolute. It doesn't matter where I cut this. There are no correlations entanglement. There is the reduced density metric remains pure. So let me say this is a product state, and it will correspond in this plot, which is zero. Okay. Very good. And what's interesting about the product state is that if we try to represent it, what we need to specify, this can be represented. So how many? What's the computational cost? Or if you want how much memory we need to store it. Okay? Well, it's order n, right? Because for each spin, we have to determine how much this state is, and that would be two complex parameters, maybe. And we have to do the same for each of the spins, right? So what do we mean by phi 1? Well, phi 1 is going to be some linear combination of spin up, we've been calling it 0, and spin down, or 1. So I give you two complex numbers, and I have determined this state. Two more complex numbers, I have determined this state, and so on. How many complex numbers do I need? Order n. Okay? So there is no problem in representing product states of n sides. Is that clear? That's important. Okay? We just need to specify the state of each side. And the state of each side takes order 1 parameters. Yes? So that would be this line here. Now on the other then on the other extreme we have a random state or a generic state. Right? And so I'm gonna do this green now. This was this line. Right? And if we so this would be psi equal to psi I1, I2, IN. And what we said was that, or what we discussed was that this would take 2 to the n, some memory. Just to store this wave function, we needed 2 to the n complex parameters, right? You have them here. So if we're in this line, bad news, just storing the wave function is exponentially costly in n. But if we are in this line, product states, it turns out that there is no problem, okay, in doing that efficiently. So the cost of memory is just order n. And so the question is, where are ground states? So ground states of local Hamiltonian. So let's take a ground state. Now ground state is blue. Okay, and maybe we have this behavior, maybe we have that behavior. Doesn't really matter. The point is that the entanglement is much, much lower than the generic situation. You know, if it's a constant or if it's a logarithm, that these are details. And the question then is whether this implies, okay, perhaps, that memory, that in order to store these ground states, maybe we can do this with maybe order n, maybe order n squared, we don't know. Okay? The big question mark. But clearly we've noticed by looking at entanglement that the ground states are not at all behaving as generic states, so there is hope that we might be able to do better than we can do for random states. Okay? Good, so before we go on to analyze this in more depth, let me first switch to 2 plus 1 dimension, space-time dimensions. And this is a picture you have not been working with so far. But don't you worry, there is something called homework 2 that will change that. So what we can do in this case, and I'll stop plotting correlations, I'll just focus on scaling of entanglement entropy. We can again have gap systems. So there is the gap case. Now we have kx and ky. And I can plot here E of k. And we can have a situation where, what did I use? Orange, where there is again a gap. So imagine that this is the ground state energy, and there is again a gap through the first excited state. We can also have then a gapless case that I'm going to call gapless type 1, in which what we have is that we do have a zero mode. Okay? And finally, we can have in two dimensions, two spatial dimensions, we can have other types. Another type I'm going to call gapless 2, where instead of having a zero mode, we have many zero modes. Gapless 1, gapless 2. And you want to think of that as for instance, what we would have if we had a Fermi surface. So imagine this goes like this, then it hits the zero, and it goes backwards. So you can imagine a situation like this, where instead of just having a zero mode, you have a continuum of zero modes. Okay? And it turns out that this will affect also, again, it's a property of the spectrum of the Hamiltonian, but it will affect, will have an implication for how the ground state entanglement scales with the size of a region. So in this case, when I talk about the region, what I mean is that we may have now the two-dimensional lattice, and we'll have a region which is going to be L sides times, so this is going to be L times L, okay? And we are going to be asking, so region A, right? So this is region A, and we are going to be asking the same question, how does the entropy of region A depends, scales with L, with understanding that now region A contains L square sides, okay? So we can ask this question, and for free fermions, we can even answer this question, and that's homework 2. You'll find it Friday, I guess. So what happens then is that if we plot the entropy in this first case, we find that the entropy S of L, the function of L, the entropy grows proportional to L. Okay. So remember, there are L square sides, and the entropy grows proportional to L. Okay. For the gapless case, anybody wants to venture what's going to happen? So it turns out that it's going to be, again, disappointingly similar scales as L for type 1. And for type 2, S of L will scale a bit more than linear. It's going to be S of L goes as L log L, okay? So there will be some logarithmic deviation from that, okay? So that's going to be characteristic, this logarithmic deviation of systems with a Fermi surface. Or free fermions, but more generally for interacting systems also there will be situations where we will have a large manifold of zero modes. So whereas in this case here, we could have one zero mode, or maybe there is some dispersion relation with another zero mode here, another there. This will start counting, increasing how much entropy we have, but it's going to still be scaling as L. Maybe the prefactor will change. The idea is that if we have a finite number of zero modes, we have the same scaling linear as if we didn't have any zero mode. Whereas if we have a one-dimensional manifold of zero modes, then we have this logarithmic correct. Okay? But of course, you should be comparing this to the scaling that we would have if we had a random state of the same system. And can somebody tell me how much entropy we expect as a function of L in this case?
Which is going to be maximal, so L squared.
L squared, right? And it's counting the how many degrees of freedom we have there in on the lattice, and it's going to be L squared. So again, this is something you can test numerically, but I'm just giving you the results here. Question?
Yeah, you say that if you have a Fermi surface, it's L log L. Is there like some information about the Fermi surface more quantitatively encoded in the entanglement entropy? As in, is there like a size of the Fermi surface that you can read off or something?
There might be. There might be. It's a bit tricky the way it's encoded because you may have to regularize this by putting some, you know, on the lattice, this is clear, but in the continuum, there might be some cutoff that you have to introduce. It might be hidden, but it's true that you could learn beyond just the qualitative behavior, you could go quantitative at some level. This is not going to be relevant here, though. We just want to see that there is some characteristic, some qualitative difference between having a finite number of zero modes and having logarithmic scaling, because that summarizes what you can find in 2+1 dimensions, all the possible behaviors. And later we'll try to give a cartoon picture, a toy model that will be able to reproduce this different scaling. And that's the level we want to keep this. And then next week we'll see how we can build tensor networks that can reproduce these behaviors, where the important part is can we match the scaling without looking into too much into the specific constant. Yeah. Sorry, did you ask something else?
But you said with tensor networks, that's in 2+1 dimensions for critical systems.
Yes.
That's Merna.
There will be some tensor network next week. Okay. So, all right. So this is 2+1, and now I could do 3+1, but I'm just gonna draw a table for the general case. So I'm going to deal with d+1 space-time dimension. So that would be d equal to 1, d equal to 2, d equal to 3. And then we want to talk about gap, or we've been talking about gap. Oh, that's the one I want it here. So we've been talking about gap systems and gapless. And then we've been talking about two types of gapless, which I'll introduce in a second again. But the idea is that if we have a gap in the Hamiltonian, then in any dimension, the entanglement is going to scale in a characteristic way, which it's known as the area law, okay? Which is S of L is going to scale as L to the d minus 1, right? So what's L here? L is the linear dimension of the region. So in three dimensions, what we would have is a region of size L times there is another one, L, right? So we would have L3. Side and side, in general, we'll have LD sides. Okay, so a random. So in D special dimension, if we look at the random state, we would expect this to scale as L to the D. And what we're saying is that instead, in ground states or gap systems, we have LD. L to the d minus 1. And that's what we call areolo. And if you're bothered by the name, just it's a name. What we are saying is that the amount of entanglement in a region of linear size L scales not proportional to the size of the region, right? So if this is region A, this the size of the region goes as L to the D. Instead of that, what we have is that the entanglement scales as the size of the boundary. So let me call the boundary. Of A, let me call it in this way. Okay. So what we're seeing here is that the area law is telling us that the entanglement entropy in ground states, so S in the dimensions ground state as a function of L, which goes roughly at least for gap systems like this, this is nothing but goes proportional to the size of the boundary of the region, okay? So this is the size of the region, and for random states, and for ground states, it's just proportional to the size of the boundary of the region. That's what the area law is saying, right? Okay, and then what we've, is that clear? So it has a very geometrical interpretation. Good, and then, that's for gap systems, and for gapless systems in 1D, we had this log L. So it's a logarithmic departure. It's a multiplicative correction to a constant. That of a constant, we have log L. In two dimensions, I mentioned that we could have scaling like L or L log L. And that would be we had type 1 and type 2. So gapless type 1 and gapless type 2. Okay, and by type 1, you want to think a small number of zero modes. For type 2, you want to think of a large number of zero modes. And the same thing happens in larger dimensions. In three dimensions, we'll have L square or L square log L. Okay? So what we have is that for ground states of local Hamiltonians that might be relevant to condensed matter or quantum field theory or any such context, we will always see that the ground state obeys an area law, or at most displays a logarithmic correction, multiplicative correction to the area law. Okay, so this is L d minus 1 times log L. Okay, which compared to L to the D, the scaling for random states, is still very, very little. Yes?
Yeah, I was just wondering, MERA and MBS and all the tensor networks I've ever heard of all have an area law entanglement. So can you still, except for in one dimension, can you still efficiently represent L log L entanglements with
Mara? I think you'll be very motivated for next week.
Okay.
That's what we will be discussing next week.
Okay,
so this table here, let me just, to be clear, let me emphasize what I mean by type 2. So type 2 means that the Fermi surface has codimension D minus 1. So, codimension 1. So in D space dimension, type 2 means that the Fermi surface, Fermi surface of dimension, the space dimension minus 1. Okay? So in two dimensions, in two special dimensions, if we have a continuum of zero modes, that's a circle like that, it's dimension 2 minus 1, so it's one dimensional. And if we were in three dimensions, you can imagine that you had a sphere as a Fermi surface and so on.
Is there a geometric interpretation for the type 2? Like, why is there the log L?
No. Good. You're motivating the rest of the lecture. That's good, if I have time to go through it. Very good. So So what do I want to say? So this table is for free fermions. Okay. You have enough knowledge now to reproduce it if you want in your laptop with Julia. But it also seems to exhaust everything we observe for interacting systems. Now, interacting systems can be complicated to study, so the evidence is always through numerics, and it's partial, but it's consistent. Okay. So we believe that possibly this exhausts all the types of scaling of entanglement entropies that you can find in any number of dimensions for interacting systems. Very good. So now, if there are no more questions, I can go to what I wanted to discuss next, which is I hope this is clear. We have this area law, at most logarithmic corrections to it. In either case, ground states are marginally entangled compared to random states. Yes?
Yeah, so you say that you believe that this is also true in higher dimensions for interacting systems.
Yes.
How can you test that?
As I said, there is numerical evidence. You can deal with small systems. Sorry?
Either in small dimensions or something that you can solve analytically.
There are results from quantum field theory, arguments that you can use there. There is a number of, I have the list here, I don't know how convincing this is. Yeah, you can use quantum field theory arguments and calculations, explicit calculations. You can try with exactly solved models and then numerical calculations. There is really Monte Carlo simulations for systems with no sign problem. Roger Melko here does this a lot. I mean, works on computing the scaling of entanglement entropy. And this has been corroborated by him and many other people in any dimension. All right, so what I want to do now is I want to this is going to be 12.2 toy model for area law. Okay, and so what I'm going to do, maybe I'll start here, is I'm going to, every time you see something like this, means I have a spin 1/2 degree of freedom, so a two-level system, and this, the whole thing is in some entangled state, which is going to be maximum entangled state of two spins. Okay. And then if I draw something like this, which could be 8 different size degrees of freedom entangled pairwise in this way, then if I ask you how much is, well, first here, if I ask you how much is the entropy of region A, right, you'll answer quickly, oh, within this is the entropy of the reduced density matrix, which happens to be identity over 2, and the entropy of this is the probability distribution 1/2, 1/2, and the answer is 1 eV. Okay? You've seen that? So what happens if I ask how much is the entropy of region A here? Okay. Anybody?
Twice that, because you break 2 of them.
You break 2. Okay, so that's correct. And how do we, if you want a more careful discussion, you have to build row A. And row A, if I call this 1, 2, 3, and 4 qubits or spins, 1, 2, 3, and 4, then it's going to look like identity over 2 coming from this part. It's going to look like 2 and 3, pure state in 2 and 3, times identity over 2. So this is particle 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, and particle 4. Okay? It's going to look like this is the reduced density matrix. I just took the whole state, which is a product of these entangled states, and I trace out these guys, and I'm left with the reduced state for A. It has this form. Okay? Every time you cut, you break an entangled state, you get an identity operator over 2. This identity is a 2 times 2 identity. And what I'm saying then is that the entropy of row A is the sum of entropies from this piece, and this piece by additivity. This one gives us 0, it's a pure state. This one gives us 1 EVIT plus 0 from the pure state plus 1 plus one from the second, and this is two here, okay? The conclusion is that if I draw something like that, we understand that it's an entangled state that is the product of different entangled states, and that if we, I ask how much is the entropy for region A, I just count how many bonds I'm breaking, okay? Very good. So now here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to assume that I have a lattice model where a site is made of the tensor product of two level systems. So my site, its site, okay, contains two spin one half. And I'm going to use as a toy model for this, I'm going to just say, here's a wave function, and let me study its properties. So there will be some, let me collect several colors. So there will be some wave function that is of this form, right? It's, I have a chain of such sites, its site having two spins in it. And I can ask, well, I can define a state that looks like this, okay? What is this? Well, it's the second spin of each site is entangled with the first spin of the next site, okay? And for this wave function, I can ask how much is the entropy of a region A, right? And that's what we want to do next. So let's compute a region here. Can somebody tell me how much entropy we have in the region? So this is region A. And can somebody tell me how much is the entropy in A? Javier? How did you compute that?
The number of bounds you're breaking.
Very good. One per boundary, right? There is a boundary here, we break one. There is a boundary there, we break. Now imagine we, for the same wave function, let's compute the region A that is larger, has three lattice sites. How much is the entropy? Somebody else? Very good. So in this case, let's call this A prime. We also have 1 plus 1, 2. Okay. So you see, this is a very simple model. It's a toy model for a wave function. And what we see is that it doesn't matter how large the subsystem, the region A is, what we're going to be counting is how many singlets we're breaking. And how many singlets are we breaking? Well, it's going to be proportional to the size of the boundary of the region. But the size of the boundary of the region is always 2. Okay? You only have the left contribution and the right contribution. Okay? Yes?
So within the big circle, the two small sites don't need to have any interaction at all?
This is a wave function. It's not Hamiltonian. So I don't know what interaction means here. But if you're asking whether there are correlations between these two spins here, the answer is no. Because this state is already entangled with this one in a way that cannot be entangled with anyone else.
But by saying grouping them as a site, what do you, like one big site, what is that?
Imagine that you have, so a site is some number of degrees of freedom that you can choose, and I choose them to be two spins. So you could even go to a lab and think that you've built two spins, okay? And you call that your lattice. So this is a very simple wave function, and all I'm trying to point out is that the entropy saturates to a constant as a function of the system size of the region A. Right? It's always a constant. And this is the area law in 1 plus 1 dimension. So let's not think that it's something very complicated. It's just saying that when you look at the region of size A, the entanglement between that region and the rest of the system, or the entropy of the region, is just coming from entanglement at the boundaries of the region. Is that the question?
Yeah, but at the smaller L, you got actually, you did get an increase of entropy.
Sorry?
So it wasn't constant scaling throughout, right? It was only...
Yeah, no. Well, I'm just trying to reproduce a constant behavior now. I'm saying it's very simple to reproduce. That the constant part of it. Okay? So toy model number two. So conclusion here is this is proportional to the size of the boundary of region A, which is a constant. So we have the area law. This was for d equal to 1 dimensions, base dimensions. Now let's do d equal to 2. Okay, in two dimensions now, I'm thinking that my each side is made of 4 spins. Okay, so I have a lattice in two dimensions. And I have that, again, each spin is entangled. Right? I imagine a wave function for the whole system, which is the product of entangled pairs. Okay. And are you ready for no surprise? So let's define region A. Somebody can tell me how much entropy we have here. Can somebody count to 8? That's the okay. So how much is the entropy? Come on, I'm giving you a hint. Anyway, that's the entropy for region A is 8 because I'm cutting 1, 2, yeah. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah, 8. Good. How about region A prime? So first, what is this 8? It's 4 times however how many spins you have in here, right? Now for A prime, so I'm going to call this A prime. For A prime, it's going to be 4 times 3, okay? And what I'm doing here is it's 4 times times L, where L is the linear size, right? Linear size is 2, linear size is 3, okay? I'm just counting the size of the boundary. Of course, that's what I'm doing. The size of the boundary is 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 times the linear size. Right? So there we have it again. This toy model gives you that the entropy is proportional to the size of the boundary of the region. Area law. Okay? Is that clear? Again, it's a very simple toy model. But it still reproduces the scaling of entanglement entropy that we see in ground states of gap systems in two dimensions, and also some gapless systems in two dimensions. Okay, so d equal to 3, you can imagine what's going on there. You just put 6 spins on each side of your lattice. You build the same type of wave function, but in three dimensions. And when you look at the entropy of a region of linear size L, then you find that the number of bonds that you're cutting is proportional to L squared. Okay? Again. So again, we have that the entropy of size A of a region of region A is proportional to the size of the boundary. Okay? Good. So very simple toy model that explains the scaling, the area law. Now let's try something different. Oh, huh? Great. So that was supposed to be toy model for area law. So let's look at logarithmic corrections. This is a different toy model. Now I'm going to assume. Now I'm not going to draw all the entangled pairs explicitly, except the ones that I'm going to care about. So I'm going to imagine that, again, we have a wave function of all these sides. And now I'm going to imagine that, well, this is A. This is my region A. Okay, so it has 8 sides in it. I'm going to imagine that when I look at the entanglement entropy, I try to look at the reduced density matrix for region A, I find entanglement that comes from different contributions. So these contributions correspond to different length scales in the system. So imagine that there is some entanglement coming from nearest neighbors. Okay? Nearest neighbors here, nearest neighbors there. Okay? As before. Very short distance entanglement. But imagine that when you look collectively at two sides, these two sides are entangled with these two sides collectively. through some extra entanglement. Okay? And finally, when I look at groups of foresights, collectively these foresights are entangled with these foresights, and these foresights are entangled with these foresights. So what we have there then is that, how do I want to say this? So the let me talk about the size of A, effective size. Right. Here we start with L equal to 8 with respect to each individual side. We have L sides in there. And we get some entropy, some contribution to the entropy, which is equal to 1 plus 1. Okay, so the entropy, it's going to be a sum of contributions. The first contribution to the entropy is going to be 1 plus 1. It's just the boundary. Right? The region has two boundary points, so we get 2 e-bits contribution. Now, we go to the next length scale. Now we start to look at the same wave function, but where we've grouped the sides into pairs. Okay? And the claim is that these two sides together and these two sides together, they contain an extra e-bit of entanglement. They are entangled through an extra e-bit. And the same here. So in this case, effectively, L effective is 4. Okay? We have now 4 effective sides in the region. And we get the contribution to entanglement, which is coming from each boundary. Okay? And then we have that when this is 2, we get another boundary contribution. And now we are done, because the next time we group things, this has become the new effective side would be the whole system, the whole region A. And the idea then is that we can come here and count these contributions. And what we find is that there is a 2. And then there are different length scales, right? So this 2 is this 1 plus 1. Okay? I'm doing the math for you today. And then these are the different length scales that contribute. The initial length scale, lattice spacing, the next one, and the next one. And how many do we find here? Well, there will be log 2 or the log 2 L contribution, right? What I'm doing is every time I'm going in this direction, I'm breaking the, I'm dividing the effective length by 2. Okay, so how many times can I do that? Log 2 L before I get to effective, the next one would have been 1, right? So if I started instead of 8, if I started with some generic L, I can divide by 2 only log L times. So the conclusion is that in this toy model, I've described both the wave function, okay, through what degrees of freedom are entangled with what degrees of freedom, and I've also computed how much entropy we have. What we have is that the total entropy scales as logarithmically as the size of the region. Okay. So the idea is that this wave function is this toy model is more complicated than the original one. The original one we only had entanglement at short distances. In this wave function, we assume that we have entanglement at short distances, but also at longer distances and at even longer distances. And when we look at the entanglement entropy of a region of size A, we need to add all these contributions together. Okay? How many contributions? Well, that's going to be logarithmic in the size of the region A. And that already gives you the logarithmic correction to the ideal. Questions? Yeah.
So in that case that you have like two sides are maximally entangled with each other, right? But like in here that there are two sides that you group that it's not like maximum, like in
right. I'm gonna assume that they have some amount of entanglement.
I see.
So the first model was very concrete, the second model is a bit hand wavy, right? But the idea is that if there are contributions to the entanglement between a region and the rest of the system, if there are contributions coming from different length scale, if you look at how many length scales are contributing, you automatically get the logarithmic correction. So you can imagine that then not just the critical system, so this would be a toy model for the critical system, but you could also imagine that it's a good toy model for the case of a gap system, in which you could imagine that there are only contributions to some length scale shift, right? So suppose that we have this contribution, but at some length scale we stop having contribution. Then the scaling will be the one that we've been describing, where we have that first we have some logarithmic scaling and then it saturates the constant. Okay? This happens right at the correlation line. It means, suppose that you, when you have a region of certain size, you look at the entanglement of that region with the rest of the system, and it adds contribution from short distances, longer distances, but at some point you stop. Okay? Then that will explain the saturation. Very good. So
you need some criticality argument to say why each contribution from each level should be the same, right?
You are right, but I don't want to do that. I just want to say, suppose that we have this wave function like this, then we will have a logarithmic correction. That's all.
If you don't make an argument like that, like you can write down many toy models to explain many toy
functions. Yeah. We are free to draw many toy models. Yes. This is true. There are many toy models you can draw, and this one is one that already gives you the logarithmic correction, and it's worth thinking about what that means. Okay? Time is up, and I drew some stuff and I want to use it. So what I'm going to do now is that in D equal to 2 special dimensions, if we do the same, if we say that the region has contribution that come from different length scales, we are in for a surprise. Okay? We don't get the logarithmic correction. So the first drawing, we have L equal to 8. And what we have is that if you count the size of the boundary, how many bonds so this is my region A, the whole thing is my region A, there is the rest of the system outside, okay? And I want to see how many bonds I cut. Well, it's going to be, it's 4 times 8, where 8 is how many you see here, okay? Or if we contain the system, if we do the same and look at how many contributions we get at effective length scale 4, in going from here to here, we just group together. We're just taking this as our new site, right? And what we see is that the size, the number of bonds that we are cutting, now it's 4, there are 4 faces again, times just 4. And here, in the next step, we do this again. We imagine we constrain this region into a single region, single site. And then is now effectively the size of the boundary is just 2. And we look at how many contributions we have, and we have 4 times 2, right? 4 faces, and each one contributes 2. So let me add these numbers together for you. So first we have 4 times, and then from the first contribution is 8, plus the second contribution is 4, plus the second contribution, last contribution is 2. Okay? And so what we see here is that, well, this is this was L, this is L over 2, this is L over 4. Okay? So let me add this in general. It's going to give us some number 4 times L of 1 plus 1 half plus 1 fourth. Okay? And you can imagine that if the system was larger, there are more and more contributions. So 1 over 8, doesn't matter. Okay? The point is that this is smaller than 2. Okay? So what we find is that even though we are adding contributions from different length scale, the total sum is proportional to L. Okay. So it's again the area law. Okay. So in 1 plus 1 dimensions, what was happening is that each length scale was contributing the same amount. we had log L in the scales, then we have log scaling. Now here we have contributions, again, from log length scaled. But each contribution, instead of being a constant, is being reduced by geometrically. So even though we have as many contributions as before, these individual contributions are decaying very fast. When we add them together, we just get a constant. We don't get a logarithmic correction. Okay? And I'm making everybody wait here. That's not good. So very quickly, the last drawing. Is this one here, which will also be relevant. How do we get this logarithmic correction in two dimensions? So how do we get d equal to 2? How do we get a logarithmic correction scaling L log L? Well, we can do that if we assume that we have a model where when we go from one length scale to the next one, instead of getting one copy of the system, for some reason we get two copies of the system. So what I'm saying is imagine that here we had contributions that are 4 times L, right? Because there are, this is L. Now we have L effective here, which is L over 2. So we would get a contribution that would be L over 2 times 4. The 4 is just the number of faces. And here again, we would get 4 times L over 4 from 1, 2, and 3. This is exactly what I just described. But imagine that we get twice as many contributions at this level. So now we have a factor 2. And 4 different contributions at the next level, factor 4. So of course, in this case, this is all hooked up so that we get 4L times now the number of length scales. Okay? So log L, as in the one-dimensional case. Now, what I'm saying is, maybe in this toy model that we can actually realize in practice, what we have is that each length scale comes with a surprise. In considering the system from one length scale to the next one, instead of getting one copy of the system, we get two copies. Okay? So each copy is contributing half of the entanglement, but we have two copies. So in total, we have the same contribution from that length scale. And the next length scale, each of the copies breaks into two copies. So each subcopy is contributing less and less, but we have more and more copies. Okay? If that happens, then we recover the L log L scaling. Okay? We'll get back to this picture because there will be a tensor network which is doing exactly this. Okay? And the name will not be Mera, but branching Mera. We'll see that there is a tensor network that follows this type of idea that matches the logarithmic correction to the area law. Okay? And I apologize, it's 10 minutes past the time, so I'll stop here, and I'll see you tomorrow.